Welcome to the Agency of the Month, DHS, sponsored by HPE on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com. Now here's your host, Tom Temin.
The Homeland Security Department's Science and Technology Directorate just published the first of six integrated product team reports. It's a look at the major research areas the S&T Directorate says could benefit all parts of the department. Dr. Reggie Brothers is the Undersecretary for Science and Technology. He tells Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco how the department is trying to make it easier for industry to work with the government.
I think about a year or so ago, you brought up the idea of something called an integrated product team. And I think the goal here was to bring in some of the different components from DHS and help start these conversations on, you know, what projects you should pursue and that sort of thing. So can you tell us about that and how that's progressed since we last spoke about it?
So here's the challenge that we're trying to solve here. We have a, as you know, DHS has an incredibly broad mission set, and we have a limited budget in which to solve problems. Because right, so my job, the job of the S&T Directorate, is to bring technological solutions to the mission sets to solve the capability gaps that may exist within the department. That said, because we do have limited resources, the question becomes, how do we prioritize, how do we decide on what we actually do research on? So we decided that we'd bring together teams of folks from our operational components, along with S&T, our directorate, to determine what made sense, you know, what are the big areas that we should really think about addressing as a way of having the most efficient and effective use of our dollars. So we did that. We've come up with six areas: aviation security, cybersecurity, border security, biological, radiological, and nuclear threat, incident management. That includes our first responder work and counterterrorism. So the way this works is we actually bring our operational folks together to discuss their mission sets, their challenges. We then come up with those topic areas that I mentioned. And then within those topic areas, we come up with a more fine-grained set of challenges that we then actually publish so that our industry partners can help us to actually come up with solutions.
And, you know, based on some of those areas that you've identified, where are you on some of those? Have the proposals gotten out there to industry? Have you heard back from industry? How's that going?
So I think, you know, one of the challenges that we've identified since I've been here has been trying to develop a homeland security industrial base. And part of the issue there is making sure that folks understand what our challenges are. So we just recently actually published our first IPT report. So we're just starting to get some feedback from that. But that said, we've been all along working in these areas. So we've developed a number of different mechanisms, including more traditional long-range priority announcements, but we're also using accelerators. We have a Silicon Valley program, and we're doing prize challenge as well as ways of getting our message out to industry as a way of energizing some set of industry to start forming our industrial base.
Yeah, let's talk about some of those different initiatives that you have going on. You mentioned the accelerator project, and I think the broader goal of all of these things is to just make it a little bit easier for industry to work with you all. So how's the accelerator project going? What updates can you give us?
Yeah, absolutely. We're excited about this. This was an idea, I think, you know, that we just thought we tried as an experiment. Again, this goes back to realizing that we have to develop a strong, enthusiastic industrial base. So the thought was, can we actually start early-stage companies? And we said, well, let's try that. Let's do an experiment. The first experiment we did was around wearables for first responders. We invested in two existing accelerators. The program is called Emerge. We actually had about 100 companies apply for these accelerators. We had 25 that were selected. 18 actually came out the other end. And since that time, we've actually had good success with those companies. We've got, I think it's like 50% have actually received follow-on funding, and three are actually selling into the first responder market space right now. We've also linked them up with larger companies so that we can increase their ability to have distribution channels and scale more easily, as part of, you know, which is part of one of the challenges or some of the challenges for these startup companies actually developing business in these areas. So one of our concerns with these companies was, can we actually develop sustainable businesses that have both commercial and homeland security applicability? And so far, that seems good. We've started our second round, and we're getting a lot of interest with that. And, you know, stay tuned for that one as well.
And can you talk about some of the challenges that come with working with these types of companies? I mean, from what I understand, they're not necessarily incredibly familiar with working with the government to begin with. So how do you overcome that challenge?
A couple of problems. One, a lack of familiarity with just doing work with the government. And that specifically comes about a couple of ways. One way is that they don't necessarily know what problems we need to solve. And that became clear to me after I took a couple of visits to a couple of areas in Silicon Valley and Boston, Austin, et cetera. It became clear to me they don't really know what our problems are. The second problem is, even if they know what our problems are, is how do you actually do business with us? So how do you become part of, how do you participate in a solicitation? How quickly can we actually give you investment dollars if we actually, if you're selected through the source selection process? And how do you do, and what is that source selection process? Because typically, if you go through the traditional process, it can take a while, as I'm sure you know. And that doesn't really match the type of time constants, the type of pressures that these companies have. So what we've done is we've developed something called our other transactions solicitation mechanism. What this does is this actually takes advantage of something called other transactions authority. And this is defined as something for non-traditional businesses. Those are businesses that traditionally don't do work for the government. And that it's for the purposes of research and prototyping. But it gives us the ability to do work with these companies that haven't don't have the traditional type of systems that some of the larger companies do have to do business with the government. So that's one thing we've done. But the other thing we've done is we've streamlined the solicitation process itself. So some of the concerns that we've heard has been this just takes too long. It's very difficult to get through the proposal process, these kinds of things. So we've actually created, and this is working with our Undersecretary of Management and our Chief Procurement Officer, a much more streamlined solicitation process. In this, we've actually modeled it after kind of a Shark Tank-style process, you might say, where essentially the first stage is you have to fill out a 10-page application, so it's pretty short. That application is then vetted by some of our subject matter experts. That's kind of the first gate, if you will. And the second gate is you're asked to come in and present a 15-minute presentation or video. That's it. And then based on that, you are given a thumbs up or thumbs down, so to speak. And then the goal after that is to get funding to be within 30 days. We've actually gotten funding in one case to a company within 10 days. So we're very happy with this process. I had a chance to talk to a CEO of one of the companies a couple of days ago. Got a lot of good feedback. He was saying that, you know, the advantages he was getting from this was, one, of course, he gets the mentoring that an accelerator would give you, but he's getting exposure to important problems that he thought, because they're Homeland Security, they're important to him personally and his family and his community. So he was really excited about that. And then not only that, he gets to, we were introducing him to some of these other companies, these larger companies, as well as the test and evaluation ability we have in operational environments to give them some sense of how well their product actually works in our particular market space. So it was really good feedback. And I've also talked to some of the senior leadership of the larger companies. They've found that this helps their aperture, if you will, how they're looking, what companies they're looking for that they might want to work with that they might not have found before. So far, it seems like this has been working out quite well for all the folks involved.
And, you know, many different agencies, the Defense Department included, are going out to Silicon Valley. And I believe you all have had this program up for a little while now. But can you tell us a little bit more about some of the things that you've learned from, you know, touring some of these companies and going out to some of these, I guess, innovation hubs and how, you know, you've applied those lessons so far?
I think one of the most important lessons I learned a couple of years ago, frankly, and that had to do with, you know, this creative community, if you will, is really distributed. It's much more distributed than it has been in the past. I think, you know, one of the things that has fascinated me was that about 1980 or so, there was a real change in the investment between the government and industry in applied research and development. And about that time, you see this inflection point where prior to then, the government was investing mostly in applied research and development. After that time, it was industry. Not only that, now we're seeing a lot of this groundbreaking research is in some of these smaller companies, some of these newer companies. And so we have to understand, we have to figure out, this has been the challenge that we have, is how do we open our aperture wide enough to find these companies and what they're doing? But not only that, how do we make that translation I was mentioning? How do we actually talk to them? So one thing that I talked to a venture capitalist in California about one time, he said, look, you know, right now, you know, you're seeing a lot of different kind of apps. And a lot of it, you know, really revolves around dating, restaurants, and these kinds of things. And that's simply because that's what they're interested in. And those are the kind of problems they're interested in solving. That's where they see their particular market space. But he kind of challenged me. He said, you know, if you bring them really hard and important problems, Indeed, homeland security is a very hard and important problem. They'd want to solve that problem too. And, you know, that's what we've found. I think it's been really intriguing to see how much interest we've got from these companies in saying, yeah, this is important to me. I really want to solve this problem. So I think the biggest lesson I've learned is how much interest there is in learning about our problems and trying to solve our problems, and also then trying to break down some of the barriers for them to work with us, which, like I said, has to do with just speed of getting through the solicitation process and getting the actual funding. And then, of course, getting the feedback, because another challenge that the companies have is they can create a product, but how do they know whether this product actually solves the demand, whether it really helps our operational users? And that's where, you know, we can help, because we work with first responders directly. We work with Coast Guard. We work directly with Customs and Border Protection. We work directly with our cyber units. I mean, so we have this knowledge. We have these people that actually are on the operational front lines and can talk to these companies about what is actually needed. You know, for example, Customs and Border Protection did an industry day in Silicon Valley, and they were able to talk from their own personal experience about what they need and what makes sense and what's their operational environment. Because their operational environments are different than the type of environment that a normal commercial product would find itself in.
Dr. Reggie Brothers is the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at Homeland Security, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. I'm Tom Temin.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
The Homeland Security Department Science and Technology Directorate says it's learned a thing or two about doing business with startups in Silicon Valley. It's adopted some of those lessons so industry feels more comfortable working with DHS. Dr. Reggie Brothers is the DHS Undersecretary for Science and Technology. In part two of his interview with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco, he explains how he'd like to see the DHS Silicon Valley office evolve.
So let's go back to, you know, what I said before, I think, which is what our mission is. You know, we're really trying to solve some of the most important problems of homeland security. We're trying to do that with the most effective, efficient use of the investment dollars that we have. So we've created an IPP process to define what the priority things are that we should be working on. And if you look at the innovation literature, you know, what it really takes to be a really innovative environment, part of that has to do with being connected with the operational users. Another part of that has to do with having a very wide aperture and looking broadly at what technology is out there, what technology is coming and anticipated. And so I think where I'd like to see this go is where we have a amplification across the creative community of what our challenges are, why they're important, and how to work with us. And I'd like to see an emergence of this homeland security industrial base, where it's not just in one area. You know, this is across the country. We have international partners as well. It's not just startup companies. It's larger companies. It's everybody. It's academia. It's laboratories. It's an environment where creative people are aware of our problems. They're incentivized to work on our problems. And we actually are, as quickly as technology is accelerating, we're quickly fielding solutions for our operational users.
We're speaking with Dr. Reggie Brothers. He's the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at the Homeland Security Department. And you've mentioned the unity of effort a little bit so far, but wanted to ask you how that's evolved from the time that you first started at DHS to now.
So Secretary Johnson's unity of effort, I think, has been an extremely powerful concept. It's been an extremely powerful development within the department. I say that because, as you know, the department came together with a lot of agencies coming from different places. And what the Secretary has done has brought us into real unity and into a couple of different working areas. He's created these integrated task forces, but he's created a more unified acquisition process. And as part of this unification, that's where these IPTs fall in. So one of the last things he was trying to get done was make sure that not only is our acquisition process unified, not only are our mission sets unified, our operational commands unified, but our research and development is unified as well. And I think, you know, when you start doing that, that's when you start leveraging commonality across the mission sets, that's when you start being able to really focus on the most important challenges. And so I really applaud the Secretary for his unity of effort initiatives.
And to go into some of the IPTs a little bit more specifically, you know, everybody's talking about cybersecurity. Your department has a really large role in providing, you know, cybersecurity services for other agencies. But then at the same time, you know, you've been discussing this research and development around cyber. What are you seeing out there from, you know, different companies or research organizations or whoever that you might work with, you know, in this cyber field?
Well, I think it's really interesting. There's been a mentality of perimeter defense for quite some time. And I think what you're hearing a number of people in the community saying is we have to adopt a different type of paradigm. And you're seeing that. You're seeing things like moving target defenses. You're seeing a lot of emphasis on behavioral analytics. You're seeing an emphasis on bringing machine learning into solving some of these problems. So there's another areas in a risk base, right? So if you look at the White House's cyber strategy, they talk about more risk base, where instead of trying to protect everything at the same level, you're actually trying to assess what you have to protect at the most highest level as a better way to deploy your resources. So I think there's becoming a more nuanced and sophisticated viewpoint on cybersecurity, and you're finding companies that are actually doing that. Now then you go from cybersecurity, which has traditionally been in the IT world, to now we go into the cyber-physical world of the Internet of Things. That presents a much broader attack surface, which people are just starting to think about. I think the good news is people are thinking about it. I just hope we're thinking about it quickly enough. One of the areas that we're trying to push into is trying to emphasize to cities and communities this whole area of resilience, because I think that if you look at the capabilities that the Internet of Things brings to us, resilience, that is the capability of a community to respond to a natural or man-made disaster, is important. And there's a lot of issues here. You know, for example, what do we define as resilience in the first place? How do we ensure that happens in an efficient, effective way for cities, for city managers? So this is an area that we have been talking about with cities and communities, and it's an area that we're currently working on, trying to understand what are some of the capabilities that these new technologies can bring us.
Dr. Reggie Brothers is the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at Homeland Security, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. I'm Tom Temin.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
Dr. Reggie Brothers is the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at Homeland Security, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco.
So switching gears a little bit, you know, wondering if we could talk a little bit about engagement within your workforce. I know that was a priority for you when you first came on board, was boosting the morale within the S&T workforce. And we just wanted to hear your thoughts on how that's been going. I know, you know, DHS made progress on the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, and I know the Secretary was happy with a lot of progress that the components and offices have been making, but wanted to hear your perspective.
So I think, you know, I can say, you know, you're starting out, I think we have made progress. If you measure by the FEB survey, we're up, I think, 7 percentage points from last year, and we were up, I can't remember how many percentage points a year before that. So we have been making progress. I think what we've been really trying to do is a couple of key principles. One is just increase transparency and communication, right? And how are decisions being made? I think what I've been trying to do is make sure that I can communicate as much as I can to as many people as possible. There's some simple things. You know, it's walking around. It's talking to people. It's trying to make sure that the kinds of things that senior leadership is thinking about is communicated to the entire workforce. It's getting feedback. And we have an employee steering committee now that's been used to make recommendations, suggestions to how to improve morale in the workforce. And I think these kinds of things are showing very good results. It's a work in progress, and it's something that I'm pleased with the progress we have made. There's more progress to be made, but I think this whole area of making sure that we communicate clearly what we're doing, why we're doing certain things, the benefits to the workforce, and also the mission impact, because I think folks are more incentivized to work when they understand how they make an impact to the mission, because we have such an important mission. And I think we've been trying to make those connections. So one way we've been trying to make those connections is something we're calling our Pioneer Program. And in the Pioneer Program, we're actually sending some of our folks to work with our operational components in the field to understand what they're doing and how they can make an impact. So this has a twofold result, right? So in one way, it helps our folks understand what the needs are. Another way, it shows them how important the work we do really is. We also have our components come to us so they understand better what we're doing. We're actually working directly with the Coast Guard Research and Development Center so that we get closer to the kinds of work that they're doing. And we're actually having companies come in as well. So we're really trying to emphasize and encourage our workforce to reach out to the components, the industry, and understanding the larger context in which we play.
Have you gotten feedback from your employees, your workforce, about some of these kind of more innovative ways that you're trying to do business with industry, you know, the Silicon Valley work and the Accelerator project? Have they given you any feedback about what that is like for them?
The feedback I've heard has been good, and this is the Silicon Valley, the Emerge, and the Pioneer kind of program. So I've gotten good feedback. I think, again, these are new things. They have to be integrated into the way we do our normal business processes, and that's just something that we have to continue to work on.
And, you know, kind of stepping back and looking at S&T a little bit more broadly, any comments or any general thoughts about, you know, where you'd like to see S&T go into the future or, you know, other future priorities that you might have?
You know, I do. I think we've made some good starts on this Homeland Security industrial base. We've made a good start in trying to give our program managers access to a variety of different tools, working with directly with components, working with the startup community, working with industry, et cetera. But we still have to do more. The thing I mentioned earlier, what I'd really like to see is let me give an example. We started something we call our national conversation. In our national conversation, this is actually on our website, we pose problems and we just ask people to comment. Now, the first time we did this, it was around our so-called visionary goals. One of the things we wanted to do in the beginning was develop a set of 10, 20-year goals that we could actually reach to. And so we actually developed a set of these goals internally, but then we decided to reach out. And we did this through a national conversation. And I'll be honest, I was really fascinated by the enthusiasm that we got in our responses. Someone asked me, you know, what if you get, you know, some really weird response? I said, well, we'll just have to deal with it. But we didn't. You know, we got really engaged responses to what our visionary goals should be. And I think what that shows me is that there's a lot of interest around the country in helping solve these problems. So I'd like to see us just have greater range of reach to all the people that can and want to help solve these problems. Because I think, you know, you're seeing with all these different ways, crowdsourcing, these kinds of things, that creative things are being done. But there's interest. But we just have to be able to reach beyond the normal bounds that we have, that we've been used to in the past, to be able to achieve, you know, even greater impact on the Homeland Security mission.
Dr. Reggie Brothers is the Undersecretary for Science and Technology at Homeland Security, speaking with Federal News Radio's Nicola Grisco. We've got links to much more information, and you'll find this interview at federalnewsradio.com/Federal Drive. I'm Tom Temin.
Thank you for listening to Agency of the Month, DHS, sponsored by HPE. The entire show is available on demand on federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.